in future lectures. He came upon, for example, the mathematical relationships among sounds. For example, the musical intervals is what this means. If you pluck a string and you pluck another string half as long, it will produce a sound twice as high. Now, one can think of the finest piece of music that any of us enjoys, and it's actually pure physics in action. It could all be described mathematically. There is nothing subjective about this. Now you'll say, wait a minute, the same bit of Chopin, played by one pianist and played by another, will not necessarily sound the same. That's entirely true. But what's happening inside the piano is all physics. Ah, are there some laws that are just woven into the fabric of the universe, and our task is to discover them? And the more of them we discover, the more we will know, and the more we can communicate. Because if I tell you, you know, that plucking strings or setting columns of air of certain mathematical relationships to one another into motion will produce a certain effect, you can go off and test it. You don't have to take it as second-hand knowledge. You don't have to take it on my say-so. You can go check it out. Ah. He does the same thing with his famous Pythagorean theorem, though that may have been one of his pupils. C squared equals A squared plus B squared, the rule for figuring out the sides and the hypotenuse of right triangles. Well, if something like that, a fundamental human shape, a triangle, could be expressed mathematically, how many more things, perhaps, could be? And so we come again to our friend Anaxagoras and mind. Material answers are insufficient. Pure ratiocination may help us out. We must somehow try to get above language. And if we can get above the ambiguities of language and the ambiguities of sense perception, we may then be able to communicate reliably. Now, it's at that juncture in Athens, with all of these problems in the air, that a group of thinkers called the Sophists come into place. Now, the Sophists have had a bad reputation. Sophistry has a bad reputation, and perhaps with some justification. One thing very clearly that the Sophists did was turn to practical matters. They turned to this world, the world we live in. Now, the Sophists and Sophistry, in a way, got their bad reputation because they'd actually started out studying language. All right, again, one of these fundamental problems that we've just been dealing with. They start studying language. And they were people who ultimately worked out the rules of what we would call rhetoric. Now, we think of rhetoric today as somebody trying to bamboozle us. Rhetoric is actually a formal way of expressing persuasive speech. Sophists were teachers who, for a fee, would teach you how to speak elegantly, yes, but persuasively. That is the crucial thing. They would teach artful use of language for persuasion. Now, this was important in the Athenian assemblies, where people made speeches. It was important in Athenian law courts. Think of Thucydides and all of the speeches that we talked about as being littered through Thucydides' history. We see that the playwrights, for example, Sophocles, pillories the Sophists. We see that the comedian Aristophanes pillories the Sophists. These were the great issues of the day. These were the great issues of the day. Why? Why? What was so engaging about what these Sophists were doing? To understand that, we must turn just briefly to Sophistic ethics. The Sophists drew a distinction between nomos, which means law, and physis, which means nature. Law, they said, is sheer convention. You and I make a deal, we can change the deal. You and I make a deal, somebody else can tempt either of us to make a different deal with them. We do this according to our own convenience. Physis, in the natural order of things, justice works this way. The race is to the swift. The battle is to the strong. Asking whether that is right or whether that is good is utterly meaningless. Beside the point. That's the way the world works. Since the Sophists held, society's rules are not eternal, they are not immutable, they are not universal, they are mere conventions, they are subject to change at any time we wish. Let's pause for just a moment. Remember Antigone. When we talked about the play and what Sophocles has held out, does she answer the eternal truth of the rules of the gods, and that's a literary convention, not a religious one, fundamentally, or does she obey Creon, who has made these rules, who may make